Now on the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee. The mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. And when the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out, take it to the chief steward." So they took it. And when the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. The gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Christ. I have a confession to make unto you. I've gotten hooked on Mike Holmes again. Any of you remember Mike Holmes? He's the Canadian contractor on HGTV. Got really big around 2001 with his series Homes on Homes. And the premise of the series is that Mike goes into the fixed homes that have been renovated by contractors who did shoddy work. And then his second series was Homes Inspection. And there he went into homes that people had bought because they looked really great and had been given a thumbs up by a home inspector, but they found issues later on, so he goes in to do what he calls a homes inspection. So a common theme in these series is Mike looking beyond the bling, the showiness of nice finishes and pretty paints, and considering whether the foundation, the stuff in the walls, is done properly, or if there's dangerous things lying in wait there. Open connections, mold, asbestos, rotten wood, sloppy construction. The show highlights one of our human tendencies, which is to look at the obvious. The flash, the polish, the pretty finishes. To pay attention to the loud or the showy. All while we ignore the day-to-day, the mundane, the quiet, the things behind the walls, the people behind the scenes. And I think some of that dynamic is at work in our texts today. This is the first of seven signs that Jesus does in the Gospel of John. These signs are events, indicators, banners by which God reveals who God is through Jesus. And the end of the text tells us that this sign in the wedding in Cana revealed Jesus' glory. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think of the glory of God, I think of the power that made Moses' face glow because he'd been in the presence of it. It's the brilliance so bright that Moses can't see God full on, but at best can look at God only from the backside. The glory of God is something spectacular. It's so visible, so brilliant, you can't miss it. The glory of God is in your face. But look at the sign in our text, in which the glory of Jesus is revealed, and you might begin to wonder about that definition. Because the sign at Cana has more in common with what's going on behind the walls than it does with all those spectacular finishes. The miracle itself, the turning of water into wine, is mentioned only in passing. Did you pick up on that? Listen to it again. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water," and they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine, did not know where it came from, he called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." Did you hear it? It's almost one of those, wait, what? The fact that the water has become wine is almost a throwaway line, isn't it? I mean, all the steward knows is he's tasted some really excellent wine. And the bridegroom seems pretty oblivious to how close he has come to disaster. The disaster of running out of wine at this celebration. He didn't seem to react much at all to the steward. And it would have been a disaster if he had run out. In that day and age, the wedding celebration lasted at least a week. And it was the responsibility of the bridegroom and his family to provide all the food and drink for that group. And to run out would have been deeply shameful to them. And in a society where honor and shame are prevalent, this would have been devastating to their social standing and perhaps affected their prospects in all kinds of areas of their life for years, if not generations, to come. And the bridegroom seems kind of clueless about this. In fact, for this sign, the only people who seem to have any idea of what really happened are Jesus, his mama, maybe, and the servants who did the work of getting the water. So except for those few, what's happened is probably accounted for as something fortuitous, or at best, mysterious. I mean, the steward says, most folks serve the better wine first, and then once everybody's more than a little tipsy, what do? Well, now you start throwing the Boone's Farm at them, right? You know? But he said, you're different. You serve the best stuff last. Now, what did the bridegroom do? I wonder, did he just kind of go, yeah, that's exactly what I did. I mean, he had to know that he didn't have this stuff, right? Did he even wonder about it? Or did he just write it off as some, hey, that good on me. You know, somebody found a good bottle of wine somewhere and go back to party. So if this story is what reveals the glory of God, this miracle mentioned in passing, what does that tell us? I think it tells us that the glory of God in Jesus is at work in the normal. In the everyday, the unflashy, unsexy stuff that passes most people's notice. It's in the care taken to stud and wire the walls correctly. The glory of God is in the homeless who are housed from the cold for a night, and the hungry child who gets a meal to eat at school. It's in those who mourn, who receive a word of comfort. It's in the please or thank you that can make someone's day. The glory of God is found in all those things that are done for others, not because you have to do them, but because you want to. Jesus didn't have to do this miracle. Unless you read between the lines and hear Mary telling him, "You're going to do this." He chose to do it. He chose to do it quietly, through normal means. And perhaps the glory of God is in those things that are done without sounding the horn, without publicity or pomp, but quietly, consistently, in the background. So even those who benefit might not know how close they came to disaster. But note something else. The servants, those who did the hard work for Jesus, they knew. And it was hard work. These things taken together, these six jars, would have held something like 180 gallons of water. Now let's assume they were mostly done, but not all the way done. That means that when Jesus tells them to fill them, they would have been hauling somewhere upwards of 120 gallons And depending on where the water source was, it could have been from miles away. Now, I don't know about you, but I whine when I have to carry a gallon of milk from the garage into the house, much less 120 gallons of water. The servants are privileged to be part of the act and to see the truth of things. To see it wasn't fortuitous planning on the part of the bridegroom or even pure happenstance. It was a gift from God that they have avoided this disaster. And it was from the generosity of God made possible through their laboring at the command of Jesus that the bridegroom and his family received what they needed for the day. More wine. And it strikes me that this describes us as followers of Jesus. Those who are given the privilege and responsibility to listen to the commands of Christ and follow them. To do the hard but simple work of filling the jars, sharing of our food, of our wealth, of speaking a kind word, of performing anonymous, random acts of kindness, of doing our own work in our jobs and our vocations well, to the best of our ability. The story also makes me wonder where we might miss God's glory. We are the servants of Jesus, but we are also prone to those human tendencies, right? We spend a lot of time looking at the spectacular, the flashy finishes, the wow factor. And we miss the glory of God in the little things, in the ordinary, the everyday. We miss the gift of a warm home to go back to, clothes on our back, enough to eat for the day. What would it be like to pay attention to those things this week? To look at the servants around us, folks who bring us our fast food, who sack our groceries, and to see in them God's glory. To see what may seem like happenstance or good planning this week as a gift from God, a sign of God's glory. What would it be like to consider that the labor we do at the command of Jesus, as unspectacular as it seems, might be the means by which God saves someone, even if they don't recognize it? What would it be like this week to look for what others do not, the way that God has worked in their life, perhaps even considering doing something that the servants did not and speak up? To be so bold as to approach them and say, you know, I don't know how that became wine, but I know the source of it. Let me tell you what I know about Jesus. We are reminded each week at this table that Jesus works through ordinary things, bread, wine. May this remind us this week, remind us every week, to go into the world led by Jesus, to see and proclaim the glory of God in the ordinary, everyday things. Amen.